and welcome to my hearth.
The title of this particular episode is rather unusual, because it makes it sound like a Stephen King novel, Pet Sematary. There was certainly an element of death in the story, as well as an element of mystery, so I suppose it was worthy of a kind of Stephen King. Here are some of the facts that you would need to know. The first house in which I lived was a bungalow which my father had built. It was called Cornside because originally it had been by a farmer's field. Just behind it was an area of woodland, which of course was fantastic for my sister and I and any of our friends to play in. I've already said that anything can happen in a wood, but it's a magical playground for children. It had a huge variety of trees in it, as well as all those wonderful undergrowth things that grow, including lots of ivy. We loved it and thought of it as our own, although I believe that partway through it, it belonged to somebody else. However, whoever it was, they didn't bother with it. The second and very important fact was that my sister and I were very different. Although she was nearly 5 years older than me, she was really Princess Anne to my Prince Charles. I was quiet and studious, and she wasn't. She had an amazing imagination and very often got stuck on an idea and ran with it. She had an adventurous spirit, which saw her through some tough times when she was older. So that's the first part of the puzzle, the fact that we had our own bit of woodland. The next element is that my sister was obsessed with death. I don't mean that she was a mass murderer, although of course she would have been very capable of it. But she loved all the rites and rituals of it and was really interested in things that were dead. As I said earlier, on my mother's side in particular, we came from a huge family, a family that seemed to us to have no end. However, it did mean that we went to a lot of funerals. These were long and involved and very Catholic. They were often presided over by people that I just couldn't understand what they were saying. It took me a while to realise that the majority of it was in Latin, especially the mass bit. Remember that this is pre-Vatican II, where people could start holding religious services, if they were Catholic, in their own native language. For me, when I was young, death was complex and poetic. Because it was so ever-present, all of my family made reference to it and also had elements of humour involved with it. One of my great uncles had lost the lower part of one of his legs when he was working in the pit as a young boy. In a glamorous turn of events at that point, he had a wooden leg. I wasn't there at the time, but apparently when they took the leg off, which operation was done on my grandma's kitchen table, the portion of the leg was given a proper burial in a grave in the graveyard. Later on, when my great uncle died, the rest of his body was reunited with the leg. Whenever he went past the churchyard, normally with my mum, he used to say to her, "You have to remember, I have one foot in the grave." Because of his injury, he couldn't work down the pit anymore, but he was given the job of knocker-up. That's the person who went round the local cottages and woke up the miners who were doing the night shift by knocking on their windows with a kind of long stick, which he tapped on the window. However, when I spoke to other people, they said that what really woke them up was the sound of his wooden leg on the cobbled streets as he walked along. We went to a lot more funerals than weddings, but both of them were huge family celebrations. They involved fasting followed by feasting and copious amounts of drink. Because we were based in the South in term time, we didn't go to all of them, but there was always a representative. Several of the family members owned pubs and clubs, and they often hosted these events. I am sure this fed into my sister's idea of the ritual of death. Now, the next clue in this Agatha Christie-based horror story is that my mum used yellow dusters for lots of her cleaning. She could have won prizes for her attention to detail with cleaning, and one of the things that she did was to start with all the dusting. She had a huge selection of old-fashioned yellow dusters, which formed part of her armoury. You did all the cleaning and polishing at a higher level first, and the last thing you did was the hoovering. This meant that any dust which had escaped from your endeavours would be picked up by the hoover. And you weren't dropping dust onto a clean floor. At regular intervals, these yellow dusters were washed. And so my mum was very aware of how many dusters she had and what state they were in. Now, the next incident in the mystery was that a number of these dusters started to go missing. My father, who of course was responsible for the purchase of these dusters, was blamed for the disappearance. When he needed to be reminded of who was boss, my mum would call him Charles. So the sound of, "Charles, have you been at my dusters again?" was a cry often heard at one point. Now, if you are obsessed with cleanliness, having the right amount of dusters was very important. So the great duster row of the late 1950s was quite a thing to behold. And however much my father protested his innocence, he was blamed for the duster disappearances. Meanwhile, there was part of our little wood that I have already mentioned that the lower orders were not allowed to visit, one of them being me. It wasn't one of our usual play spots. It was rather a kind of grotto-like area, which was slightly off the beaten track. It was now definitely off-limits. And so, the mystery continued for a little while, until eventually all was revealed. Whenever my sister found a deceased animal, and I should stress that the animal was already dead when she found it. It might be a small mammal or it might be a bird. But it was given a proper burial in her little part of the wood. Moreover, so that it was treated decently, it was wrapped in one of my mum's yellow dusters, which was then used as a pet shroud. When the graveyard was eventually revealed to my parents, then my father's part in the great duster troubles was forgiven. the fact that my sister wanted to go on to be a forensic scientist and in later life became obsessed with things like Silent Witness on the television was not a surprise to me. The plethora of dusters was restocked, and my sister grew out of her need to bury things. I'm sure that in later life she could either have become a forensic scientist or a really good serial killer. As we got older, we moved our playground from the local wood to the recreation ground, which had been newly created, down by the riverside. And here one of the qualities of one of my aunts, my Aunt Rose, came into play, because whatever was said about her, she had the most amazing voice. When we were down playing in the recreation ground, she could stand at her back door and shout of us, and we would hear. It must have been more than a mile away, and she was also shouting into the river and the wind that came off it. However, we knew without fail that our evening tea time was ready. At this juncture, I should also point out another main role that my Aunt Rose played in my own life, and that is my mum was weeding in the garden on June the 22nd, 1955, when she thought she had indigestion. In fact, it was me being born. She always said in later life that she had thought that I was wind. However, it was just my good self appearing in a very speedy fashion. In fact, I was so quick that she only had time to run inside the house and lay down on a bed, and I was born. I was born before the midwife arrived. My Aunt Rose, who happened to be in the vicinity, was there when I was born. I was very tearful when I was born, a little grizzly, and the midwife had said that because I'd been so quick, I could possibly have had a headache. However, I think my mum was very pleased that it wasn't a long delivery, although it was a bit of a shock. It's quite useful, from a storytelling point of view, to say that I was born in a garden, which is the truth. Aunt Rose always saw herself as my kind of surrogate mum, because she'd been there at the birth. And every Friday night, without fail, I went to her for my tea. This is because, on a Friday, my mum went to the hairdresser. She would then join us whenever she finished with whatever work had been done on her rather beautiful hair, and all the local village gossip could then be gone over and dissected whilst we were having a rather nice tea. Aunt Rose and her husband, Uncle Charlie, were true Cockneys. Aunt Chris, who I have already mentioned, the seamstress, was Auntie Rosie's sister. And they lived in our street, only several hundred yards away from each other. More of them next time.